What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in again. First things first, follow me at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, based with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat on Twitter. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/kindaneat. YouTube.com/thatskindaneat, where we're going to see my man No Can Do perform a song off of Jimmy the Burnout called You Should Already Know, or Did You Know That? He was not quite sure of the title. We're going to figure it out. It's all good. Make sure you guys subscribe to Kinda Neat on the podcast app from iTunes or on Stitcher, and make sure you rate it 5 stars, leave a comment about who you want to see on the show, et cetera, et cetera. We check that, and every time we see a new rating or a new comment, we feel so official. So thank you very much for your continued support. We got my man No Can Do again on the show. He's our first repeat guest, but I don't want to look at that as laziness, as us not seeking out to find new people. He actually just wanted to come on and talk about the writing process and some shit that he's been going through. And we had a long existential crisis of a conversation where we both decided that we are growing up. And actually, I get kind of scared about talking about growing up, and I just end up trying to crack lame jokes, and he's like very serious about being a changed man. Look at the range, man. I got a whole new game plan. What else happened? Oh, today I got tattooed a bunch. I got like a gorilla tattoo on my forearm, and this thing that's like kind of some old Italian like superstition stuff having to do with Il Cornuto, which is the evil eye, and the Maloichia. So it's like, imagine the metal horns, like the sign that you would make for metal hands, and it's upside down, and then there's like two bull horns crossed behind it. And then I got a sign that's, or then I got a tattoo that says pizza mind, like with a slice of pizza, like, you know, get a piece of mind, but it's like pizza mind. Yeah, I'm stupid. What else? Oh, we have a show at the Troubadour for my birthday. July 8th is my birthday, but I booked July 11th, which is a Friday. It's Intuition Equilibrium. That's me and Mark. It's Speak. It's Cool Roy. And it's at the Troubadour. And we're so excited, and we're hoping that you guys will help us sell it out. We want to see all of you there. There's going to be new merch for you guys to purchase. T-shirts and tank tops and snapback hats and all kinds of stuff. And autographed posters. And man, just fun times though all around. And I'm not a big birthday celebrator, and so I'm very excited to be able to celebrate my birthday with all of you guys and do what I love to do. So I look forward to seeing all of you guys out there. You can go to troubadour.com and buy tickets. Thank you so much. With that being said, this was a really long conversation, and I don't know how long, I don't know how much Ben is going to cut out. So I'm just going to like get right into it. This is my conversation with one of my closest homies, No Can Do. Here it is. What have you been up to?
I've been doing a lot. I traveled since we last been on. I've been on this podcast.
A year ago already.
Yeah, I've been around the world a couple times, and I've put out a record called Jimmy the Burnout. We put out some Hellfire Club releases, the Dorner versus Tukey, you know, but mostly been doing Low End Theory and, you know, I don't know where to start, dude. I've done a lot of shit since then.
The funny thing is I don't remember where we ended either. You know,
I don't know. I almost tried to listen to the old podcast today so I don't repeat myself, but I think I'm gonna just repeat myself.
It doesn't matter. We can repeat ourselves.
All right, cool.
It took you a long time to put out a record, just like it took me a long time to put out a second record, but you worked on more projects in the meantime because you put out Bomb Zombies.
Yeah, I put out the Bomb Zombies.
You put out
Flashbang Grenada.
Flashbang Grenada with Bus.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
I put out a few scattered EPs in between.
And
two
mixtapes.
Yeah, I put out the Tits and Explosion mixtape, which is basically an EP, and I called it an EP, but yeah. It was really just the fat from Jimmy with the Burnout. Mm-hmm. Like when I felt as if the sound, when I really fell in love with a particular sound and fell out of love with another sound.
Well, you're looking at me more nervously than you usually would.
I'm just nervous to fucking talk for an hour.
Why?
I don't know, man.
Why? We're friends.
I know. That's funny.
Has there been tension in our friendship? Is that what it is?
No, it's not tension in our friendship. I feel like when we, you know, when we go out for coffee or when we when we fucking go eat or when we hang out and go to shows and shit like that, you know, it's like TMI time. I know too much about your life. You know too much about my life.
Oh, and I'm going to put everything on blast, bro. No, I'm just kidding. I'm tactful about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you and I do always end up going. We go, when we go out for for coffee and shit, we do end up fighting about business ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Me and you are diametrically opposed in ways for the come up of a young indie artist, which is
our marketing ideas and schemes are very different than one another.
My idea for marketing is to not market.
Yeah,
and I think you're very on the nose with
it's funny because the one thing that we always tend to argue about is like this whole theory of like, I don't care about numbers. I don't. I know you don't. And what I'm saying is like, what may surprise people that actually listen to me is that I like very much care about numbers. I pay attention to what does good and what does bad for me. And then if it does bad, then I'd try not to do it anymore. And if it does good, I'm like, let's try that again.
Yeah. My thing is, I really just want to do things that feel good to me and that are obviously like, just like little silly gut instincts, things that make me smile just because I've done a lot of
like
things.
What numbers to dial?
No, I've done like back in the battle rap shit, like a lot of that shit was, you know, for fucking numbers or for fucking like a value system.
Yeah.
And it was always to make me feel good, you know, or something like that. Like, you know, like, oh my God, I got fucking 30,000 fucking views in this in an hour or some weird shit like that. Or even before it was all about that, I was always trying to like, you know, climb some imaginary rope.
Yeah.
And now it just brings anxiety to me when I think about that. You know?
Well, and let me clarify too, like when I say that I care about numbers and how well things do, none of that affects the actual music that I make.
No, I know. Like, I know that.
Yeah, I know that you know, but I'm explaining because I feel like I'm making myself sound like that's all I care about. Like the music that Mark and I make is like, it comes out how we're going to make it regardless. It's like the extra shit that I worry about. You know what I mean?
It's the timing of things.
The tweeting, the timing, the fucking Facebooking, like when to announce a show, like what kind of t-shirts, you know, all the shit that's not the music.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff where I'm like really pay attention to like, okay, what works and what doesn't, because I want to find a delivery system that gets the most people to hear the music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When it comes to videos, like what kind of videos work best, et cetera, et cetera. Like I want the most people to hear it, you know?
I think with myself, that's actually how you're supposed to do it. But I know since I've got a busy family schedule
and
I know that I can't, if I were to create a system, it'd be very hard for me to uphold it, especially with the type of person I am because
what type of person are you?
I'm one of those dudes that like, I'm a super emotional dude. Right. So like, let's say I'm going through something with like, you know, my family, with like my mother or with, you know, my wife or, you know, with the kids or things like that. Like I might just be stuck thinking about, instead of fucking, you know, creating the content or putting the content out, I might be stuck thinking about how am I gonna pay these bills and still be able to take my wife out to keep my relationship right, or like, you know, spending time with the kids, or should I be at this PTA meeting, or should I like, you know, should I be helping like, you know, my daughter with her science project? And it's really hard. Like I'm either like usually all or nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for me to multitask, you know? So it's hard for me to go from, you know, helping my daughter with her science project to turn on the artist thing.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like you're spreading yourself thin right now?
No, I felt as if I was spreading myself thin before.
When?
Making the record, promoting the record, being hands-on with, like, Hellfire Club and the politics between, you know, like, you know, setting up release dates and general record strategy and shit like that.
Yeah.
Now I'm beginning, but I'm setting up the infrastructure for that to be delegated so there's less on me.
Right.
And actually being able to communicate that more with the people that I'm working with. And, I was just in Bali in Indonesia for...
Oh, sorry, don't ball on us too hard.
Yeah, I want to really ball on you. Yeah. I mean, you know, I made like 3 million rupiah when I was up there.
Whoa, you made $14?
No, it was like $300. But, you know, but I was there for a week and I swam every day. I took random walks and I like started praying and all kind of, you know, shit that I haven't...
Wait, you can swim?
Oh,
racist jokes, I'm sorry.
I could swim like a Nigerian pearl diver.
tight.
But like, you know, like I, which are usually female, I think.
Oh, I didn't know that. I feel like I've been to the beach before with you, and you're like not a swimmer, dog.
No. The beach used to scare the shit out of me.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's only because, like, on some real shit, it's only because, like, I'll fucking be out there and, like, my foot will go down and I'll step on something slightly sharp like, I got sucked by a jellyfish and I'll just, like, get out of here. You know?
Nah, I mean, not to mention your shorts are usually, like, 4 inches too short at the beach.
Hey, when you got legs like these, man, you got to show them, bro. Oh, I got some excellent legs. I mean, I looked at an old picture of my dad from the 70s and, like, you know, a picture of my mom. She's like a ballerina or whatnot. Yeah. They blessed me with some good legs. Once I got old enough to be like, you know, out of my like hyper hip hop phase where I was like everything, like I had the long Dickie shorts and the socks up to here.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, man, I'm about to show off some body.
That's how you were when I met you. It was like tight ass shirts and then baggy ass shorts with like socks pulled up.
The shirts weren't tight. They were largest. They were largest. All right. They were big Dickie shorts. Their socks pulled up.
I feel like you've always been a man who keeps the proportion of jean size to t-shirt size. The ratio was like 2-to-1 jeans to t-shirt. Like the jeans are always bigger than the t-shirts, but now they're both tiny as fuck. So I mean, you got your shit evened out.
Nah, I mean, dude, I don't know why you're making fun of me on your podcast. Like, I don't do that to you.
That's all we do is snap on each other in real life. Real talk. Yeah. All of us that have known each other for a long time, that's all we sit and do is just clown.
But
go back to Bali. You're swimming and walking on the beach and you're centering
yourself.
I wasn't walking
on the beach, but I just realized who I was and who I am out there, you know?
Yeah.
And I realized that, like, I put so much energy out into a bunch of things and things started to kind of lose value because I was just in like a hamster wheel of just like always being busy.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of just like doing, I mean, and this goes along with the numbers shit too. Like I only want to do shit that I really want to do because that allows me to execute things a lot better because I'm like hyper motivated to do it. Like if I wake up and I have a video sitting there and I'm like, fuck, I really want to lift this out. It makes me feel like when I was a kid, when I had like a song that I wanted everybody to hear.
Yeah.
Or when I had a rhyme in my head and I couldn't wait to get to Project Bloat on Thursday just to spit it one time a cappella. The, you know, that like those, the endorphins that get let off and that feeling, you know, they make me want to do it again. They create like this little addictive chemical, you know, in my head. And
dopamine.
And I really dopamine, you know, fucking, you know, a rap peptide, if you will. But, it, you know, I really need that to keep going, you know, just because I think it's really hard for me to balance family life and the music and actually the business of music. And then I want to say a social life as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I don't really have a social life anymore.
Yeah, see, dude, I mean, that's what, like, you know, our little lunches and coffees and all that shit, that's really what that's about. Like,
yeah, well, like, we tried.
We try. We, I mean, you know, at least once a month.
We tried to do, have rap
the Culver City rap brunch.
Rap brunch.
It was me, you, Mike, and Dumb.
Yeah, because all of us lived kind of right there in Culver City.
Yeah.
And it worked like twice.
It worked. I mean, but at the same time, I still do it without you.
Yeah, but brunch without me is just brunch by yourself, probably. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but it's cool.
I mean, I do that too. I'm. That's the thing is that you could always find me at S&W's on motherfucking Washington Boulevard in Culver City. I'm there every week. All the waitresses know my name.
Let me let you know something, man. S&W is mad average, bro.
I know that it's like somewhat average,
and it's expensive.
I go there. I mean, it's an average price, but I go there for the environment. I go there for the ambiance.
Well, you know,
the ambiance.
I feel like more than anything in these times, like adults and post recession, we're all about I don't know if we're still in it. Whatever, we're all about comfort, right?
Yeah.
And so, like diners like that is comfort food, you know.
Yeah.
So like, the even feel of the diner,
yeah.
with the like straight, you know, female, you know, wait staff and like
shout out to the female wait staff
and the cash only shit, like,
yeah, which I hate. I hate that it's cash only.
But it gives you something to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a place where you take people to it and they go, oh, this is so cute.
And it keeps the fuck boys out. Cash only. I've been at fucking at that spot.
You know what I'm saying? keep the fuck boys out. Only the people with paper in their pocket.
Exactly. I was at there, you know, because that's right in Culver City with all like the people that work at Sony or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I was there and it was like, It was like a fucking pack of basic bitches that were about to come in and just be like, oh my God, did you see girls last night? Like, they were, I saw them getting ready and heard one of them say, oh, this place is cash only. Let's go. And I was like, thank God. And I was like, that's why.
Yeah.
That's why you can come here. So older people, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. It's nice.
Well, the point of that was that we tried to have a social life and we tried to force ourselves to hang out with each other again. But like, truth be told, is like all of us that have come up together. I was just talking to somebody about this today. It's like, I'm really happy that all my friends that I really believed in from the get, because like I believed in you when I met Mike, I believed in Mike, Jonathan, I believed in Jonathan, all those guys that I believed in, we're the ones that have stuck with it. And all of us are doing cool shit right now.
Like, I mean, but why do you think you believed in that person? Like, you know, like you believed in them because you maybe saw the hunger in their eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
The seriousness.
Was something different. There was something different and serious about it. And that's the thing is like, we have known each other now for like probably, you know, close to 10 years.
At least 10.
Close to 10 for all of us. And so, you know, I'm just stoked that everybody's doing shit. And that, and like, that was the whole thing, is like, we were trying to get, like, let's do these brunches to like get back in that fucking same hunger mode of when we met each other, you know?
The group thing, yeah. But, you know, you forget
those ideas and stuff.
We forget that back then the group thing was really facilitated by, and while we can't go back there ever, the group thing was facilitated by rapping. Maybe having some beers. It was really, you know, it was something really young and otherworldly, you know, that I can't even imagine being about now. It was like, you know, like a lot of times, like we would just, people would hang out and a song would get made, you know,
right.
Like nowadays it's like, I worked on the song concept by myself and I think you would sound good on it. So I call you and then maybe if you got time, you come through or vice versa, or, you know, emails and shit. We communicate by emails, like, you know, but the rap brunch was, definitely, it felt good for
it. It could have been something.
It could have been great.
I don't know what happened. Oh, Jonathan moved,
yeah.
And then Mike and I are always just kind of gone.
Yeah.
You're kind of gone a lot, too.
Yeah. That'll fuck the rhythm, yeah, our going out of town.
Yeah, our schedules are all fucked up. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know where we were going with any of that.
We're just talking shit, bro. Let's do it, man. That's what podcasts are for.
Yeah, balancing fucking time. Like, that's a problem that I'm going through right now, because I'm never home right now. I'm having trouble balancing this podcast thing with like my regular work thing, because like in fucking May I think I was only home for 8 days total. So it gets hard to balance shit. And then I can't imagine if it was to like throw in wife and kids, because like I have trouble just keeping up with these women's, you know, as a single man, you feel me? Like,
yeah. I mean, I'd imagine that's even harder, really, to be single and then just be out, especially when, like, you know, girls are like, if there's like not too much commitment there, then it's just like, my ex-boyfriend came back from
I go through that all the time. It's like, I'll be like hooking up with a chick or like, you know, starting to date or whatever, and then it's like, oh, you know, I'm gonna be gone for like a week and a half, and then it's like in that week and a half they're like, oh, well, you know, my fucking pussy got really lonely and I just like called over my ex-boyfriend and now we're back together, and I'm like, damn, fool, like I was only gone for a week, what's up with, like,
exactly.
But that also,
like, my pussy forgot.
I know, it's like, maybe that speaks to like the you know, type of women that I pursue, I guess. I don't know.
Nah, I don't think it speaks to the type of women that you pursue. I think it's the nature of the job. I think, and that's why, like, artists are always making love songs, are always making like loss of love songs, because the transient nature of the, you know, being an artist, being a Rolling Stone, you know what I'm saying? And, even if you're, because at a point in time, I was being very sedentary and I was not, like, I want to say all of 2013, other than a little trip to Europe that was 9 days, I never left L.A., you know, or actually I might have went to Japan for like three days.
Yeah.
So I was gone 12 days in a year.
Right.
But I kept a night schedule, though, because it was, I had to somehow be, you know, a dad and a stay-at-home dad at some points, and I had to be, you know, pick my wife up from work and whoop-de-whoop. But like, Jimmy the Burnout was never going to get made, right? So toward the end of the year, I decided to lock myself in this very room for, you know, maybe a month or two, and just keep a schedule that was from 9 to like 4 in the morning. I slept from 4, actually I slept from 4 to 7, took the kids to work, took my wife to school, then came home and maybe
you got that backwards, but I feel you took the kids to school and the wife to work.
No, child labor laws, fuck them. My wife, she needs to learn, and my kids need to make that money because it's more of them. So if they're more working, we get more money. Nah, I'm fucking around.
You hear that?
But that was the only time we see each other. Then yeah. I'd be asleep or groggy, and she comes home, and I'm like, hey, baby, I'm trying to, maybe have a meeting at 6 with somebody. And, it was fucked up, mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think that really fucked up my love life with mm-hmm. her. We were kind of, always, around, but, never really in love because we didn't have any quality time spent, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Have you been fixing that?
Yeah, I've been fucking all the time. No. I'm just joking. It's constant process. Just working, trying to remember dates and trying to remember whatever, and trying to remember, getting flowers and maybe having a lunch here and things like that. But
when to put on your fucking stripper thong with the elephant trunk?
Yeah, you could put on the thwap thwap. I call it the thwap thwap.
I've never heard it referred to as a thwap thwap.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because, when you wear it and you dance, it just thwaps, you know what I'm saying?
new slang.
It never thwaps once. It's like, if you're being really vigorous, it's thwap thwap.
What thwaps once must thwap twice. You exactly. Know? I mean, there's an up and down, you feel me?
If a dong thwaps in the bedroom and there's no one there to hear it.
Is it still thwapping at
still
all?
Thwapping. Does it even thwap?
Super mega pause to this whole fucking this whole side tangent. But Jesus Christ, when you were locking yourself in the studio, good shit came of it. And it's funny because I remember you started writing all these songs, kind of that you thought were gonna go try to you were gonna try to get them public, publishing shit.
I was courting a publishing company, and they were sending me stuff to write, do top line choruses and verses for other people.
And you're making and all these songs, and you're like, yeah, I don't know, I've been making beats over this one kid. He's got a bunch of fire. His name's Caleb, and I'm like, yeah, Caleb, that's the homie. You're like, you know Caleb? I'm like, dude, Caleb's been on the podcast, shit. And you guys had never met before, and then he ended up producing half the record almost.
He produced 5 songs. On a 14-track album.
Yeah, 5 songs, that's a third.
Uh-huh, yeah. I got incredible folders, man. I got folders 15 to 20 beats from each dude. Mm-hmm. And one, I had a folder with 15 beats, and it was 5 from, no, maybe 18, and it was mm-hmm. 6 from, 3 different dudes, right? Mm-hmm. And
that's from the publishing company?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, 4-5 of them I started writing to because I actually felt them. That's when I was on my only do shit that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And only one of them, I used all of his actually. Mm-hmm. I used all of his and I didn't know anybody's name on it. I just recorded it and I showed it to my liaison at the publishing company at that time. His name is Bradley Hearing. And
shout out to Brad.
Yeah, shout out to Brad. And
he hooked me up with my contact for the Troubadour, which is why I'm playing that Troubadour show, because he introduced me to the booker there.
Exactly.
So shout out to Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, those are all Caleb. And then I kind of talked to Caleb about it. I mean, really, I understood that he had other stuff going on too, but I was just like, man, I really don't have any songs as good as these. Mm-hmm. And everything, things were just too intense production wise. It was all they were all just, how do you say, not aggressive, but they're just complicated pieces of work.
And they're dense.
Yeah. And all this stuff felt really good and it felt free. And mm-hmm. I was just I'd rather do that just because my life was fucking dense. You know what I'm saying? So I want to when I perform a song, I'm not really trying to rap like I rapped, in fucking battles or even, write the type of beats that I picked when I was doing these fucking brokenhearted fucking or fucking straight, male-centered, male-energy tapes. You know, mm-hmm. I just wanted to do some shit that, I could just play the beat and people start to dance, and then I could just tell you what I did that day, mm-hmm. or what I plan to do that day.
Mm-hmm. If I did that, all my songs would be about jerking off.
I've been jerking.
What do you plan to do today, Lee? Well, let me tell you my schedule.
I get jerky when that porn star comes on. I've been, okay, sorry.
Edit. Jerky love. Oh, sorry.
That was pretty good. You sounded like fucking, I'll be sure. You sounded like Elder Barge right now.
Fuck yeah. You put the record out on your label, Hellfire Club, right?
Yeah.
Let's explain, I put my
record out on my label. Before you get to that point, keep that question.
Go ahead.
A long time ago, somebody told me, I had like other options, but somebody told me that you can't trust a dude that doesn't put records out on his own label, his own record out on his own label.
Sure.
And I was like, fuck, like, do I fucking try to, like, you know, get a little advance money or something like that? Or
what are you gonna do for advance money to pay yourself? Like, rob a liquor store?
No. Do I try to get a little advance money from another indie label
and then do a collab or something?
Yeah, or do I just try to keep the brand strong? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I decided. I decided to just that old advice from 2004. Mm-hmm. I just stuck with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I intend to do that every time, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I decided to do the pre-order shit for mine, because I was like, okay, I'm not going to have an advance, but if I have this promise from all these people that they're going to pay for it, then I can use their money that they've already sent me to pay for everything
that
I need to make. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that shit worked gloriously.
That's amazing.
Yeah. You should do that for do pre-orders, bro.
Yeah. I didn't do pre-orders because, I personally, I was just behind.
You're busy.
Nah, it's not that I was busy. I was behind schedule and uninspired, and I was just going through shit. So I didn't do pre-orders. I was fucking happy that I had CDs the week of.
Yeah, isn't it funny how you work on something for so long, and then when you finally finish the last song, you're like, okay, I got to get this out in a month.
Yeah.
And you start putting all this crazy pressure on yourself to plan it, and it's like, well, I already took like fucking 3 years to make it. Like, why am I only giving myself a month? Is what I think in my head. But then you start going like, if I wait any longer, I'm really going to look shitty.
Yeah. No, I mean, I put out release dates before. And like I said, the album changed like two or three times. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know. I was like paying attention in the last week when it was like still changing and still new songs were coming.
Yeah. So like I just had to get it out, you know, or I didn't feel like I was letting my fans down. I felt like I was allowing like my my life problems to get in the way of No Can Do's career.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I was just like, all this fucking what is it called? Fucking, you know, just indecision.
Yeah.
That's not a characteristic that I had before Jimmy the Lock.
Because I remember being in the studio and you had a folder of like, okay, this is Jimmy the Burnout stuff, and then this is for the next album. And I was like, yo, dog, all the stuff for the next album is like pretty fucking tight. You should just put it on this album.
What you want? What you want? Executive producer credits? What you want? You want your name in the folder?
That's not what I'm saying at all. But when we had that conversation, you're like, yeah, I know. I feel kind of the same way. And I'm like, yeah, dog, like, fuck the next record. Make this one a banger. You know what I mean?
And it really worked to my favor. I feel like it got like, I think I got a gang of new fans. I think it made my older fans happy.
Mm-hmm.
My peers,
they made rap fans still talk shit on YouTube, probably.
Yeah.
Battle rap. Did I say battle rap?
Battle rap fans. Yeah. It made them talk shit. Like, they're like, yeah, man, this is cool. When's the next battle?
Yeah.
When's the next battle? And I'm just like, I'm working something out with the leagues.
Yeah, this song's okay, but it's no Disaster versus No Can Do.
Exactly. Yeah. Man, it's so funny, man. Everywhere I go, I've somebody's asked me about a battle that's happened 7 to 4 years ago, the Disaster battle, the Scribble Jam shit.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, how can you?
And they don't realize that your biggest battle is keeping your shirt from ripping off because it's so small.
Nah, well, I mean, fuck you. But I think what they don't realize, especially when you don't do it, like, they don't realize how fruitless that shit is.
Yeah,
they don't realize
kind of short money or what?
Not that it's short. It's not even even if it paid well.
Yeah.
How, you know, my whole analogy about it is like fucking Shaka Zulu, right? Shaka Zulu is a funny name that you hear, but he's like a African war general, but
Zulu warrior, correct?
Yeah, but one thing that he one of the fucking I guess changes he made to African warfare or South African warfare or whatever is we don't throw any spears. All we do is he took the spear, he chopped it in half, and he says, you run up and stab the guy. You use this over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah. And so with the battle, I can write this amazing, I mean, especially with the unlimited shits and the 3 minutes, I can write 9 minutes of, like, you know, really good content and and have a great nine minute performance.
Yeah.
But I can only use it that one time.
Yeah, you can't perform that at a show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas if I, you know, have a good song,
you can't use that like in a radio freestyle or whatever.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Yes. But if I, so like that, let's say I get paid for that battle. Let's say I get paid $300 or $3,000, right? Yeah. And let's say for a show,
let's say $4 million. You get paid $4 million for it.
No. But let's say I get paid $3,000, yeah, right?
For sure.
And I have a song, and I get, you know, the song comes out and people like it, right? I get shows booked off of that. I get tours booked off of that. So let's say I get $300 per show. Mm-hmm. I can fucking use that over and over. I'll be able to use Hurry Up and Wait or fucking Break Even. I'll be able to use that over and over for the rest of my life. And it'll also take me back to a happy place, too.
That's always been, people always ask me, like, oh, why don't you put video clips of the podcast up? And it's because my theory was like, dude, watching online interviews, it sucks dick. It's the same thing as, like, you can't reuse it because it's like, you watch an online interview once and then that's it. You never want to watch it again. You put a fucking song up,
mm-hmm,
people want to watch it a million times because if they like it and it's a good performance, you won't get tired of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And you don't have to call anybody a faggot, nigger, kike, gook, fat boy, homo, lesbian. You don't have to call anybody a bad name. We can edit all that out.
We're bleeping all of that. No, I'm just kidding. I get it. In battles, that's what people do. They get racist. They get racist.
They get homophobic. They get, you know, sexist.
Patriarchal.
They get all of that.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, put a man down at all.
Totally.
You know? And that's really what was getting to me with the battle shit is that, like, I really felt like I was a shitty person at some points in times in my battle career. And those are the times that I excelled the most, you know, because when I was really feeling like a piece of shit, I was able to fucking put somebody else down way better to make me feel good. And, you know, I kind of stopped doing any battles around the time when I was putting out Mike Eagle's record. And at the same time, I'm like doing battles or natural causes.
Yeah.
At the same time I'm doing that shit, I'm actually like, just, you know, booking him at Low End or maybe like making a connection here and there, helping like write the treatment for a video and doing all this fucking cool shit that I never did before for anybody, not even myself.
Yeah.
Or maybe for myself a little bit. Like I was actually like helping somebody, you know, and I had the same energy about it. You know, I had the same enthusiasm. So that was a big turning point. That was a turning point where I was just like, I don't want to put anybody else down for the sake of art. I'd rather fucking help somebody for the sake of art, you know?
Right. Mm. As a label head, when does helping somebody become more important than your artistry? Like, when do you hang up the artistry? When do you know it's time?
I think it's an art to doing that. Mm-hmm. So you don't hang up the artistry. Like, let's say you fucking write a video, you write a video treatment or something like that, or even like, you know, you just pitch ideas.
Right. What I'm saying is we know of rappers behind the scenes that have gone on to be hugely successful managers, but at some point they had to go, I'm going to quit this completely. Mm. And people that know will still know that I've like been involved in it and it's close to my heart and I know what I'm doing and I've been through it, but I'm going to completely stop rapping and now I'm going to manage people or now I'm going to be a label head and I'm going to do whatever. You know what I mean? Like, man, how do those people decide to do that? Cause I don't know.
I mean, I think you have to you have to like money more than you like performing. I like making art more than anything.
Yeah, me too.
I like performing it. I like, creating it and performing it. So, you know, that's not on my agenda. I intend to hire somebody to do that, you know, for the sake of Hellfire Club, because I think I started it just because of something that I was lacking, you know, and I kind of would, you know, I would like to find somebody to actually help me with my records. And I feel like with Jimmy the Burnout, I feel like I just finally got songwriting. I just finally got it. So for me to even have the idea cross my mind of like just managing people when I just figured out how to fucking write a pre-hook or, you know, what a bridge is, or I'm actually tinkering with like trying to make beats right now, or I'm like doing writing for other people and shit like that. Like that's just asinine to me. I can't do it, you know? And it'd be one of those things where I'd wake up and even if I was really successful at it, I'd have to be like Diddy, where I'd have to be in the video, or I'd have to like get a guest verse and all that shit, you know?
Like break a champagne bottle over someone's head.
Yeah, dude, I'd at the very least, I'd be Baby from Cash Money. At the very least.
I'm rubbing my hands together like yeah. Baby.
Every time you see a nigga, all I do is stunt, nigga.
I co-sign that. Are you allowed to talk about writing for other people?
I can't tell you who. I can't tell you. That's all I can. I mean, just ask whatever questions and I'll tell you whatever.
Well, I mean, like, what's it like? What do you do?
It's an ego crushing process in which you really have to, not even ego crushing.
I mean, I feel like it is probably an ego thing for you because you're used to like being the spotlight. And when you write something, it is for you. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden when you have to ghostwrite, it's like, you don't get, none of that is you anymore.
It's not ghostwriting, it's songwriting. That's two different things. But, okay. But I'll say this. That's when you just don't get any credit and you know, and I want to say you get swag Dracula, but I'll say this is that, I've realized, especially after watching the fucking the Steve Jobs movie that I rented from Redbox the other day,
the one with Ashton Kutcher,
shit. You know, and not to even compare myself to Steve Jobs, that motherfucker is amazing. But I'm a boss. You know, it just so happened that I was born with big nuts. And no, I'm just fucking around. But like, you know, like I put in a lot of. How do you say? I like. When I have an idea that I think is amazing and someone doesn't see it, I'm just like, wow, you're really wasting what you think I'm good at. Because mm-hmm. what you think I'm good at is multisyllabic rhyme schemes and a double entendre and like, you know, and you know, just words or whatnot. Yeah. But what I'm best at is maybe just thinking conceptually, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I ran into this thing where especially like in the pop world, I haven't had too much experience at it. So I'm not talking like I haven't like had any fucking anything, any like real big placements go down. But I ran into this thing where somebody like, imagine you go to a restaurant and, oh, imagine that you go to a restaurant and you ask for like, I want a fucking crazy steak, the steak that you're known for. And I throw out this crazy steak and you'd be like, whoa, it's too steaky. There's mm-hmm. too much blood. There's too much, you know, the seasoning that you have or whatnot. And I feel like that's my biggest problem. And especially it's like with the writing shit, it's like it's a crapshoot and like people are trying to make something amazing. But I feel like since everybody is so addicted to success in the major label music world that they're almost afraid to take risks sometimes, you know? And so there's this one song where I had like, and it's for a super pop guy. And I was like, you know, and it's supposed to be like, you know, just a larger than life kind of song. And I was like, bro, I'm going to take a Nietzsche quote and put that in the beginning. And then this person's just singing this hook. And you know, like, and I was like, and then, you know, we need to, at this point in time, like, you know, have a reference to one of these old, their old vocals right here and have that fucking wheel in and all this really, really cool shit. And I explained my vision, why I thought it should be that way. And it was almost like, well, all I wanted to do was just, you know, hear a punchline. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like for me to be successful at that, at the writing thing, is going to take, like, to be really successful is going to take for me to be in here and execute all of my ideas and bring a finished project. Because if somebody else is telling me when to tell me exactly what to do, mm-hmm. then I just won't give them the right product. You know what I'm saying?
True or false, putting a Nietzsche quote at the beginning of a pop song is doing too much.
I mean, but who's to say, though?
I don't know.
I mean, I feel like...
a Nietzsche quote? You probably can't say, because what if it gets bought?
God is dead, and we killed him. And, like, this one, but I feel...
So it was for Yeezy.
No, not even. It was, like, almost like thinking past that, mm-hmm. thinking past the idea of God. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think Prince thought like that. I don't think Michael Jackson thought like that. I don't think that fucking Lead Belly thought like that. I don't think that Kurt Cobain thought like that. Like, they're just like, this shit this is what I have here. Mm-hmm. Like, and this is absolutely absurd, but this is really what I felt in my gut. Mm-hmm. And I feel like good artists, and I know, you know, because you are one and you're around them, that a lot of the best shit, the best things you hear are things that you've never heard before. Mm-hmm. And if somebody would have presented the idea, if they would explain it to you, you'd be like, oh, that's silly. But once, if you would have got it from a third party, mm-hmm. and heard it just as a finished product, you'd be like, damn, this should change the game. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, yeah, and it's, yeah.
So you're giving them game changing ideas and they're just like, oh, can you make a dick joke?
I'm taking more risk. I'm not giving them game changes. I mean, they're arguably horrible failures, or they're game changing.
Something new.
That's all. You know? Yeah.
Word.
Because I'm in these streets, and the streets are of something new all the time.
Are you in these streets? What streets are you in?
All of them.
Can I catch you in the trap?
You can catch me in the trap at least once a month.
No shit. Do you feel like writing for other people is helping you as an artist? Or is it just helping pockets?
It's helping me as an artist more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's helping me as an artist.
Is it inspiring you to write for yourself more?
No, this is what I can tell you. Those frustrating meetings and those frustrating writing sessions, when I get to Low in Theory, if I do it on a Wednesday in the daytime, when I get to Low in Theory, my best freestyles come out. It's got me thinking about beats. It's got me thinking about exactly what I don't ever want to do, you know? And then I understand a few things from being around like real songwriters, you know, because like I said, I got a tiny grasp of what songwriting is, but
which is crazy because you have been hanging around with me for 10 years. I figured some of it should rub off by now.
Dude, I swear to God, like, you know, me and you, I've definitely picked up some cues from you. I mean, there's a song on my record that came from a funny thing you said. Did you know that? Because you're telling me that you're about to.
There's like a semi famous female rap star
mm-hmm.
who I was like, oh, I'm trying to fuck her. Did you know that?
And then I wasn't listening to you though. The thing about it is I wasn't listening to you at all. And you're like, I'm trying to fuck so and so. Did you know that? Did you know that? Did you know that? And I was just like, huh? Did you know that? And then I'm sitting there with my phone open. I'm like, let me write this down. Like, and no, though we made like this faux trap chorus out of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, trying to fuck that. Did you know that? Did you know that?
Yeah, it was something pretty tight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was something pretty tight.
But definitely, you know, so, but no, dude, I've learned so much. I've learned from, like, Mike. I've learned from Dumb. I've learned from Sat. I'm recurrently, like, learning from our young friend Anderson Pack. I've learned a lot of shit from DJ Nobody. I really enjoy my friend circle or my friends that are getting it, you know? Oh, man, like, some of the best minds, I think, ever. And it's like a little, whether we know it or not, sometimes, especially when I'm in dad mode and I'm out and about, like, you know, I'm just like, fuck, dude, like, what if 50 years from now, you know, these records, because our records are not like, they're not Macklemore, Schoolboy Q, YG, they're not getting that attention right now. But what if 30 years?
But what if we're Rodriguez and someone makes a fucking documentary about our scene in 20 years and we, you know what I mean? Like, or like that band Death, remember?
Yeah.
Like that's a big trend right now. The whole fucking rediscovering an obscure band, making a documentary about them and having them tour the world again.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's going to be our path because that's happening now.
You never know.
But Steely Dan is one of those things. Steely Dan, like that was a band that my mother, you know, played. Like that's the only music from Caucasians other than like gospel music that was ever played in my house, you know? Yeah.
And see a girl every day, a black woman every day named Asia in LA. I swear. Yeah.
Asia, yeah. When all of my dying dances are through.
AJA. If you see a girl named AJA, you say, hey, was your parents a Steely Dan fan? And they'll go, oh my God.
Yeah. And but call her Aja, though. She'll Aja. Like that.
Really?
No. I knew a girl named Aja, and her name was spelled AJA.
Yeah.
And in high school, I was like, dude, your name is Asia. And she was like, no, it's Aja.
Oh man,
she had a booty on her, man.
Shout out to Aja.
She played volleyball, dude. Like every time she would hit the ground, it would it would just make a clap, and like that's when I discovered the thunder clap, the making a clap shit at a volleyball game. I was wondering, I was like, Aja should put a patent on this right now because I can see this going big.
I can see the clap going big,
dude. Man, if I had like old video of that, I chop it up on Vine.
I mean, if you had old video of that while you were in high school, it sounds like she's probably underage. You would be in trouble for it.
I wonder how that would work out in the court of law.
It's like, well, I recorded it when I was 15 and she was 15 too.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that I'm 30 now.
It doesn't matter that I'm fapping vehemently to it.
That I'm thwapping.
I'm flapping and thwapping all over the place, man. Asia, when all of my dying dances are through, I'll run to you. But what I'm saying is...
Yeah, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is, I think the best record of my career, which thus far, which kind of inspired what I'm going to do next, you released the best record of your career. You know, Mike's released the best record of Mike Eagle has released the best record of his career. I've already heard a record from Bus Driver. I heard a record from Milo. I heard stuff that Anderson .Paak is going to put out. I've heard stuff from LaFemera. I've heard, you know,
is that how you say her name?
LaFemera. Yeah.
Oh.
You should have her on here.
I've been trying. We've been talking about it, but I always thought it was LaFirma.
No, that's like Spanish for I'm sick, and that's inferma. But
I've been emailing her. I haven't talked to her on the phone or nothing, but I always thought it was LaFirma, but I'm like reading her name dyslexically or something.
No, you're not. But okay. But I thought that at first too. I had to ask her, what the fuck is LaFirma? But you know,
LaFemera.
LaFemera.
Okay.
But I think it's like a spin on ephemeral.
Oh, okay.
But
I agree. And the thing about it is I think that when we first all met, we felt this kind of bond in this circle of like, okay, like this is something important that we're doing. You know what I mean? And I think for a long time, like, and when I'm talking about that, I'm saying like 2006, like back then we felt like it in like 2006, you know?
Yeah.
And now in 2014, all of a sudden it feels like, oh, hey, we're all like doing some cool shit again. And like, it feels like something.
Because
all of our schedules kind of happened to sync up this year where like everybody put out a record and all of a sudden like a lot of cool shit happened in our little circle. And I'm really juiced about it. Mm. And I'm so juiced. I know.
You're Robex.
I'm the white dude in the
Jamba
crew.
Jamba juice.
I'm the white dude in the crew and I embrace it and I say juiced. All right. I say stoked as well. But no, I'm like excited and really I'm grateful that like people fucking are paying attention and they come out to like watch us and mm-hmm. stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like last October when we played that show with the four of us, me, you, Dumb, and Mike, like that was something where we've been playing that lineup. I mean, we fucking toured that lineup in 2010. Mm-hmm. All the shows were empty mm-hmm. and we fucking did it in 2013 mm-hmm. and packed out the Echoplex. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It was tight.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's awesome. Like that it's all, everyone's doing it still even.
Yeah. And even more than anything, I feel like everybody's got way more individuality. Everybody's got their own different beat makers they work with. Everybody's got their own way to the honeypot, to the fans, to the fame, to the numbers, to the fucking bloggers. Like everybody's got their own fucking path. So nobody's like, hey, could you hook me up with? It's no fucking hookups. Yeah. Nobody's putting nobody on.
Yeah.
Everybody's just playing.
We're actually trying to hide that shit from each other.
They're doing that thing. I'm supposed to link you in the email, by the way. Remind me to do that
to
later.
What?
Sure, don't worry about it. We talk about it on.
See?
Yeah.
James always hating.
I've been hating. Nah. Yeah. Just joking.
I don't know if this is me like asking about your pocketbook or what, but like what's up with the label? Like why did Mike put his shit on Mellow Group?
I mean,
like, Hellfire Club is a label. Right?
It's a label, yeah.
But it's also kind of somewhat become a crew.
Yeah, it become a crew, which I never intended for it to do. But that's, I think that happened. I mean, to be totally honest, there's very little seed money and very little infrastructure in it. So
it's just like some homie shit.
No. That's not it. Because we've attempted and we have actually succeeded in doing some really good professional releases, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was a business. The business was started before it was established.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a crew back in the day that I started called Customer Service that me and my friend started. Me, my homie Why Not, Marcel Carrion, my homie AOK, who's actually doing the label management for Hellfire, and a few others, Kale, who you've had on the podcast. You know, we started this crew and, you know, we basically, it was just like, I treated it like, you know, a day at the beach, you know what I'm saying? It was just fun time. And I look back on it and I was like, damn, that was actually like a really good business that we started that just, we didn't have, by the time things started to pop off, there was nothing to rein it in, you know? And so blah, blah. I say all that to say, You know, when it's time for shit to pop off, that's when you approach, you know, distribute, or you approach labels for, like, you know, P&Ds and things like that. And you can actually maybe even take out like a small loan and things like that. And so when it comes to like Mike, he's a grown man. He's got a wife and he's got children. And just like how I considered to release my record on another label so I can get an advance, he also, you know, he considered that and he felt he followed through with it, especially since Hellfire Club wasn't his. I have a different connection to it, mm-hmm. you know, but as far as like a general partnership, the infrastructure I was talking about, Mike's tied into Hellfire Club through this partnership, you know, mm-hmm. and that's actually way more organized than the crew. Mm-hmm. I think we've surpassed that with something that just happened a month ago, you know.
Why? What happened a month ago?
Just fucking, I had to realize that Hellfire Club was going to go the way of customer service if I didn't get more organized, if I didn't create the infrastructure.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had the fear that it was gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Well, I mean, give me 100K and fucking I'll turn Hellfire Club into something crazy.
Exactly. So there is no 100K. There is no, you know, there's
no. You don't got no hundreds?
There's no 50K. I can give you 100.
No hundreds?
I can give you 100 ketamine pills.
I'm just saying, dog. You want me to run your label?
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't want your A&Rs all up in the videos, all up on the music.
Yeah. But so, yeah, all that shit happened. But
how do you feel about Low in Theory? You still into it?
Yeah, actually, I'm into it more now.
Really?
Yeah. I was, there were certain points when I was like going there just spinning my wheels.
Yeah.
And I was like, I became an alcoholic. Like I can only be there because and drink.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no. I just have to talk to strange kids all day, all the time.
Mm.
I would go there and I was like, fuck. Like especially after battling, I started doing Low in Theory because it was a place to practice my freestyles live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really over the beat scene too. I was just like, this is not as interesting as it was. And yeah. You know,
when the beat scene kind of made way for like the EDM trap scene and all that and whatever, like,
I don't think it did.
I mean, come on. Even the music that was getting played at Low End for a while was like,
nah.
just gearing more towards,
I think Low End Theory always played instrumental music that was inspired by the urban music. So, yeah. So there's like instrumental hip hop, and then, you know, dubstep came into play, which is like basically,
that came and went very fast at Low End.
Grime, but then even EDM trap was based off of trap, you know, and, you know, sooner or later, there's going to be another, you know, group of, young Negro
avant-garde polka musicians.
I was gonna say maybe young Negroes somewhere that make a type of music, and then someone will make a electronic version of it, and then that will spawn. But Low in Theory does not adhere to any of those rules, because at the same time you might hear you probably won't hear EDM trap or dubstep there, but you might hear, you know, a fucking Roy Ayers song that night. You also might hear some new electronic new sound from Scotland or something like that.
Right.
But I was over, but I was more than I was over just performing and being out and being in the scene.
And so why do you feel better about it now?
I think it's the balance. I think the me starting to do the writing thing, and then me releasing the record and touring a little bit, me not going on tour all the 13 and maybe even 12. I think that's it.
How do you feel about this festival this weekend?
I think it's amazing. I think we sold out. We sold out in the first. When is this airing, by the way?
It's going to air the week after. So
we sold out in the first week. I think we also got picked up by Golden Voice.
Huh.
And with the next year, I think we're going to try to do it like L.A., London and Tokyo.
Yeah. Why isn't Intuition on this bill?
Why aren't you on the bill? Have you ever played Low in Theory? Have you ever
three times, bro?
Yeah. Did you ask?
Three times, bro.
Nah, I don't know why you're not on the bill.
I'm just kidding. That was I'm totally joking.
Yeah. But I was about to say, world star, this is the tap. Shut up.
No, I'm kidding.
I think it's amazing. It's a really, really dope thing. And it's a test to like Kev's foresight for the future, Daddy Kev's foresight for the future. And it's like, you know, yeah, he saw the possibility to have a festival and no one wanted to fuck with it, like, yeah, except for the artists that wanted to play. And but like in terms of like the part, the idea of like, you know, getting a sponsor or whatnot, nobody wanted to fuck with it. It sold out in 2 days.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, you know, motherfuckers were like, oh, how this happened. And also it just so happened that, you know, Paid Dues and Rock the Bells may not happen this year, right?
Neither of those are. I know Paid Dues definitely isn't happening this year.
So there's a gap. In urban, and what's urban has totally changed now, right?
I kind of think that eventually the whole festival thing is going to go like the way of the buffalo. Oh, I could be wrong about that. I mean, I'm wrong about a lot of shit.
You don't think that the U.S. is going to become like Australia and Europe and
maybe
and South?
I mean,
you don't think so?
Can Coachella last forever? You know what I mean? Like,
well, Coachella may not, but that's why you invest in smaller things. That's like saying the hamburger is going to go out of business. It's like the idea of a festival.
Hamburgers are delicious, and people that go to Coachella smell bad.
But the idea of festivals may never get old. It's, as long as college is around.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, as long as
people like to take drugs.
As long as people, especially artists, like a lot of artists that couldn't pack the Troubadour.
Yeah, to play these festivals
that are amazing.
Yeah,
they play these festivals and they promote those festivals more than they promote their record.
But also a lot of artists that could impact the Troubadour that aren't that amazing, that are just very timely and are buzzwords, get to play those festivals as well. That could just be me hating, but
No, you're hating a little bit,
but
a little bit.
Keep it real.
But it's a no for it's that's yeah. a it's a you can't you cannot make you can't have a fucking festival without that. You know what I'm saying? Because there's so many acts and somebody's got to kind of slip through the cracks. You
right,
know?
Right.
And then you got to realize. You know what's so funny though? You got to realize when corporations evolve and they're just into selling tickets, and when they're in, and you know when hype becomes a thing, when hype really matters, that's just gonna happen because sometimes you just want the hype. You know what I'm saying? Mm. I hope, and I'm pretty sure that at least for the first 5-6 years of Low in Theory Festival, knock on wood, that it lasts for that long or even more. That we won't let hype dictate what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more about art.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've safely covered a lot of territory, and mm-hmm. we rambled a lot, but it was good. We just got to do a little, it's like one of our homie chats,
yeah.
realistically, but with less talk about, boobies. Know, my pursuit of,
boobies.
You know, this strange
boobies. if I could talk about more, man, I one thing that I definitely want to say is that like,
yes.
I as a person have actually just, I feel like a totally different person than the year I was on here last. I feel like a totally different person than when I was a battle rapper. I feel like a totally different person that I was, you know, when I was a young rapper. And it's kind of fucking, it's kind of scary because I really don't know. I have no idea what my music is going to sound like later on. I have no idea what direction that I'm going to go, because my tastes are changing. They're really actually more aligning to how they were before I started rapping, actually, you know? And, you know, I've had ratchet periods in my life, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I've had a lot of godlessness and like, you know, like if not godlessness, like no spiritual connection to anything. But now I'm like just a fucking, I'm so fucking emotional and I have a conscience and it's kind of crazy. And I wanted to talk more about that, but you just asked me about fucking music shit, bro.
I didn't mean to. I mean,
no, I'm just fucking
growing up and having a consciousness is a crazy thing because like I've noticed that about myself too. Like not to flip this and go, oh, hey, me too,
me
bro.
Me too, I'm with a conscience.
Me too, bro. But nah, yeah, it's weird fucking growing up, man. Mm-hmm, like all of a sudden this shit that seemed perfectly acceptable when I was 25 nowadays seems like, hey, don't do that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or like, you, I don't know. Like I just got that Obamacare. Shout outs to, you know, my president is black, my Lambo is blue.
Yeah.
But fucking
you know, just in the last couple of years, a lot of my decisions have been made over the fact that, like, wait, I don't have health insurance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when you start thinking like that, your consciousness changes.
Yeah. I never thought like that, man.
I always do.
Yeah. I'm
like, if I break an ankle, I'll be fucked.
I know. It's so funny, man, because last time we kicked it, I told you a story about how I, like, you know, fucking ran from the cops. Like,
Yeah.
You know, but like,
my reaction was, man, you make some really fucking questionable decisions sometimes.
You said dumb decisions.
Yeah, I said dumb.
Your real words. But there's a big period of time where I had no beliefs. Like the idea of a crew, or almost like sociopathic, or idea of being connected to the earth, or even marriage. Like, these are just social constructs. And it's like I rationalize all this shit in my brain, you know? Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, I'm just now like rewiring myself to believe, to get my ideals and my beliefs back. But now they're on like new terms. They're not the terms that were taught to me, if that makes any sense. You know, when I think about like what marriage is, or what I think about what a career is, or what I think about what art is, it's not like, you know, art's doing something really cool. Like, nah, it's not really that, you know. Mm-hmm. What art is like a chance for me to maybe affect another human being in a positive way, you know, or if I do it the wrong way, in a negative way. Mm-hmm. So I should be careful about that. What marriage is two people, you know, being monogamous and, you know, just chilling out together or some shit. Like, mm-hmm. Nah, it's two people, you know, building a structure for the future and, you know, and trying to like create a fucking, trying to create this big sweltering fucking, you know, lovely relationship that helps them grow individually. I mean, together in ways they couldn't do individually. You know, even, you know, a friendship, you know, a lot of times friendship before had to do with how accessible or the pastimes a person has, you know, but I really care about the well-being of my friends now. I really care about their success, and I really care to hear their problems, because there's times when I've experienced, like, you know, loneliness and really fucking weird emo thoughts and shit like that, that there was nobody to listen to my problems, and I really like, you know, I'm back to being like, I feel like a human being, you know? Mm. So that's really what I want to express. Yeah.
I'm sorry that I didn't ask you any of that stuff earlier.
Yeah, but it's okay. No, why would you?
That was a good rant that because that left me like going, damn, James thinks way deeper than me. Cause I'm like, damn.
Yeah. Nah, I don't think way
very
deeper
well
than
thought
you.
Out and spoken, well spoken.
I've done so much stupid shit over the past 5 years, and then I've been so fucking blessed over the past 5 years as well, huh. You know? And I like, oh, dude, I went to, I took my grandmother to church. My grandma's living forever. My grandma's like 94.
Yeah.
That's saying it like that.
She's living forever. No, I was having that same conversation with my mom. One of my aunts is, great aunts is 93 right now.
Yeah.
And like, she just broke a hip and stuff. And
yeah.
And I'm like, dude, it seems kind of crazy to live that long. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I'll be like that. I don't know if I'll be that tight on that. Like, I'll be like, fuck.
Oh no, men go. I'm go before you because I'm black, but then you're coming right after. Cause you know, you probably will buy a motorcycle.
I have questionable genetics. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of, all of the men in my, on both sides of my family die very young.
Well, then so, let's get it, baby. We'll let's have a death race.
Yeah, maybe that's why I have so much soul, because I know that I'm going to die young like a black man, apparently. So.
Woo, they're going to get you. Black Twitter going to get you.
Let's reword that. You're the one who said that.
Yeah.
You're
like, I can say that. You can't.
You said I'm going to die before you because I'm black. That is what you said.
Yeah, no, I can say it. You can't. But no.
Fuck.
But no.
Yo, Black Twitter, man. Come on, dog. I fucks with you guys.
I lurk, y'all.
Yeah, I lurk heavy.
I lurk. But no, I went to church with my grandmother, dude, to the church that she used to take me when I was a kid, but I never actually went into the church because I was always in Sunday school.
Yeah.
I remember having a crush on this Korean girl, but me and her had a piano battle because I used to play piano really well when I was a kid, and she played piano way better.
Uh-huh.
She served the fuck out of me. I was always battling the man with the music, man. I was always battling, but whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to the church and I took her and I took my girls and dude, I became a total atheist, right? Like, I don't fucking believe in anything whatsoever. And then I got to this point when I was like, oh dude, religion is fucking great, because it's like, especially for like, African Americans, and probably for, you know, Jews or people, their religion walked with them through troubled times, it was usually a coping mechanism, and or maybe blueprints for them to escape their troubled times, you know, mm-hmm. and a direction for them to escape their troubled times. So I was like, I would rationalize it like that, you know. I'm not going to tell you like, oh, dude, I found God. Like, I didn't find God, mm-hmm. you know. But
I was going to say, like, the fact that you're going to church, like, what are you like? Because I know we've had a lot of conversations about religion, and I think we were somewhat on the same page.
Yeah.
You maybe even more extreme than me. And so, like, I was curious if maybe perhaps. Yeah. But that's the thing, too, is, like, I'd said things about this one thing sticks out to me. Like, you're like, oh, you know, I want to get a tattoo on my back, and I'm like, I'll get fucking broken angel wings or something. And you're like, dude, are you kidding me? I can't do that. I was fucking grew up Christian, man. Like, fucking, yeah. You know?
Yeah. No. Well, here's the thing. I respect it for this. I know it's like, with African Americans, what Christianity means. I'm not one of those guys that like religion is just keeping you guys down. Whoop, whoop, whoop. No, bro. I think in like the last 50 years of slavery, if it wasn't for religion, I think it would have been hella problems. And if it wasn't for Christianity. Mm-hmm. I went to church and I sat in this room, and it's a huge room, and there's no air conditioning whatsoever, but it's like made, or there's no air conditioning that you can hear. And we're way in the back, and just the space and the light and the time for your mind to wander and think and listen to a man speak who's, you know, well read in this book that's, you know, fucking 3,000, 4,000 years old. Mm. That in itself was amazing to me, and not amazing, like it was good to me. And even prayer, like when I was over in Asia, like I fucking went to, when I was in Japan, I prayed to, and this will probably piss my mother and my grandmother off, but I prayed to like a fox god, a Shinto fox god, when I was in Japan. And I actually prayed to this woman's god. I prayed to every shrine in there for the reasons that somebody told me that you pray to him for. Then when I got to, you know, Bali, you know, I prayed every morning there, you know, just because. And I thought about like, you know, whatever reason I prayed for, it really didn't, that's really doesn't matter. It's the fact that I sat there and I listened to myself, and I listened to like my desires, and I listened to even like my doubts, you know what I'm saying? Like, God, I really want to make a, if I asked the question, oh, this didn't happen, I really want to make $1 million. You can hear that voice in the back of your head saying, nigga, you can't do that. Or, or you can hear another voice that's saying, let's get it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you really fucking zero in on who you are. Mm-hmm. Religion helps you do that. You see, within the Bible, there's all these different stories. There's David's, and there's, you know, Samson's, and there's freaking, you know, John the Baptist, and all the ones that I vaguely remember. And, you know, it's almost like how comic books were for me when I was a little kid, where I'm just like, man, I'm that dude. I'm that guy. That guy in this pantheon of characters, that guy existed before, and this is what happened to him. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should be more like this guy right here. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
damn, fool, you've been having a straight existential crisis lately.
I know, for real. I'm fucked up, bro.
I'm like, we haven't been talking enough. Fuck.
I was gonna end the label. I was gonna do all kind of dumb shit in the time.
Yeah.
You know, or I was letting everything self-destruct, basically, you know. And, you know, if I didn't take that little trip, you know, it end. And also, like, yeah, will. The idea of will is very important to me nowadays. I'll align, like, I really believe firmly in my will, and I'll only align myself with another person's will if I believe that their will is not greater, not stronger, but if the reasons are more pure that they're about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's very important to me. And I really, and that is like the fucking grown man's fucking philosophical way of saying the shit to bring us back to where we were when we were talking about when we were young, mm-hmm. when we all became rap friends.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I can say is that I can pinpoint I can pinpoint somebody's will by the conviction that they speak with about what they're into and about what they're doing and just how they walk in it. You know what I'm saying? And like we all of at that time when we were younger, all of our wills were just right on point. You know what I'm saying?
You could walk in a room and hear that thwap thwap.
Thank you for fucking cutting the thickness out of the air. We were really thwapping hard.
We were thwapping.
In 2004 to 2006, we were thwapping.
We were out here. Yeah. So anyway. Nah, I feel that. Like, our convictions were definitely recognizable.
Because we sucked. We really did suck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
None of us were as good as fucking whoever the fuck was out on the radio at the time.
Oh, no.
But we were so fucking... It wasn't just testosterone. Because it was like...
Oh, we had people... people believed it, too. There were people that believed like we believed.
Yeah.
Not that many, but some.
And low-key, that's what everything me going through this existential fucking crisis is about. Like, lately, is that... Like, I lost belief in everything. I lost belief in everything. I became nihilistic. And I was just like, you know, I'm just feeding the family. Or I'm just fucking, you know, maybe trying to fucking see some titties bounce here and there. And like, you know, but now it's like, nah, dude, like I believe. Yeah.
That's good, man. Because I believe too, bro.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm a believer. I believe that you should tell the people where they can find your album.
You can find my album,
Jimmy the Burnout, which is what we're here to promote.
Jimmy the my last nihilistic experience, this experience between this and what's going on next that I'm talking about right now. Hopefully, I don't fall back off into nihilism. But you can find Jimmy the Burnout on iTunes. You can find physical copies at hellfireclub.bandcamp.com. You can Hellfire Club spelled with the Y, HellfireClub.com. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can at me at MC No Can Do on Twitter. You can at me at you can, you know, see me on Instagram. I post pictures of cool things. My children, not too much food. You know, my travels. You know, I'll be getting some cool pictures that I don't ever post because they're hella special to me. But I'll put up one a week at least. I promise.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, follow this guy. He's one of my good friends for a very long time, and always happy to catch up, bro.
Thanks for letting me spill wax poetic on your shit.
Jesus Christ, you really waxed poetic. That was like really, you got deep right there at the end. I'm going to have to re-listen to this to kind of soak it all in again because it sounds like you've been going through it, man.
I like how you just said, this shows how grown up we are. You said you got deep right there at the end, and I didn't say pause.
But you got meta immature right there. That was like, you're like, I'm not gonna be immature, but I'm gonna point out how I could have been immature by being immature
because I believe now. I found myself.
Oh shit. My name is Lee. Well, go ahead, get one more in.
You know, we call me No Can Do, aka Rap Game, Eat Love Pray. Eat, pray, love, whatever.
My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the board, Ben Shib, who had to put up with us just ranting off the record for the last fucking half hour about nothing. at I Am Database, based with two S's. I'm sorry, Ben. You can follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat on Twitter, where you will find all the updates about what episodes are out and what videos are going up, et cetera, et cetera. YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where we are going to see my man James Robert McCall IV, otherwise known as No Can Do, perform Did You Know That? Or what's it called? Hellfire Run This Shit?
It's either Did You Know That or You Already Know.
Because you already know.
I don't even know the name of my own song.
We're going to have him perform You Already Know or something like that.
Did You Know That?
Did You Know That?
Did You Know That?
I don't know. And then you can also follow us on Facebook.com/Kinda Neat. Where we broke 1,000 followers. Thank you very much. Oh, also, we broke 15,000 YouTube subscribers. Today marks the day that's Kinda Neat broke 15,000 subscribers. YouTube.com/It's Intuition broke 15,000 subscribers. And my Facebook fan page for Intuition broke 15,000 subscribers all on the same day.
Today is the day that we getting money, baby.
We out here getting money.
Today is the day we get tacos with the sour cream and the guacamole. All
right. Anyways, subscribe to us on iTunes, the podcast. Search for Kinda Neat. Rate 5 stars. I have no idea. With that being said, that was my man James, and my name is Lee, and this was Kinda Neat.